Welcome to Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
It's Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking. Coming up on today's program, Polly Rhea is going to join us in a few seconds' time with a segment on smart eating and asthma. Now, Dr. Janet Randall, we thought we'd get her on before winter. We're into autumn. If you're having some allergy problems now, I can sympathise with you. But Dr. Janet's going to tell us all about winter colds. We're also going to be chatting today with a guy by the name of Professor David Isaacs. More on that shortly. Composting with Angus Stewart. And a little later on, right here on your favourite show, Mind Food Radio, Jacqueline Hellier will join us today, our sex therapist, to talk about breaking up. Is it hard to do, as Neil Sedaka would say?
Mind Food Magazine and Mind Food Radio. Together, smart thinking.
It's Mind Food Radio. Well, the change of the seasons is just around the corner, yes. And every time there's a change, there's pollens and there's things like that. Your environment changes. And I hope you don't have asthma, but a lot of people start to get all these chesty things. So we thought we'd chat with Polly Ray today, who's going to tell us a bit more about asthma and smart eating for asthma. How are you, Polly?
Hi, I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Oh, look, I'm well. The change of the seasons, what does that do for people at this time of the year?
Well, it does a lot. And as you say, particularly if you do have asthma, asthma is a hypersensitive condition. So those people who have sensitivity to nutrition or environmental things, then they'll start to see flare-up on those sort of symptoms around this time, because their body will start to react to the environment and react to those extra pollens that are in the environment.
So when we're talking about our environment and the food that we eat, what should we be doing to put into our diets to sort of combat this stuff?
Well, there's a couple of things. Because those conditions are very inflammatory, the symptoms that you see and that you experience are very much related to the inflammation. So addressing the inflammation is a big part of treatment. So you can do that with food, but then also increasing, in some ways it's actually reducing the immune system, because the immune system is a little bit hypersensitive, as I say.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of reacting to things that you shouldn't be reacting to.
Right.
So you almost want to dampen it. But what we say in naturopathy is to regulate it.
So how would we regulate it? Like, so say that this morning I woke up and I'm feeling a little tight in the chest and I sort of don't have asthma, but I've got all those sort of, you know, chronic symptoms of sinus and stuff like that. How do we do it? Is it on an individual basis, or should we be taking horseradish and garlic, or what's your advice there?
Yeah, so horseradish and garlic are great for treating the symptoms. But in terms of even before that, just to prevent those symptoms coming on, vitamin C is actually nature's natural antihistamine. So when we are sensitive to things, we have an increase in histamine in our body.
Mm-hmm.
So we're reacting to those things. So sort of about 2 or 3 weeks before this change of season, really increasing your levels of vitamin C so that you don't react to those environmental and nutritional allergens is beneficial as well. So adding things like blueberries are very good. They're very high in vitamin C. And also lots of omega-3 essential fatty acids. So they're available in things like oily fish.
Yep.
That's a really nice anti-inflammatory oil, and that'll help just dampen that inflammatory response that you see. So as I say, with asthma especially, it's a really mucousy and very inflamed condition.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to bring down that inflammation.
Now, what about around the house? I mean, is it time to do a quick spring clean and start getting rid of some dust mites as well with this asthma stuff?
Yeah, exactly. So that's another environmental allergen that people will respond to. So having a nice clean environment that's dust-free, that's also important in reducing the attacks. But on top of that is using products that don't have a lot of chemicals in them. So really going clean and green on those cleaning products is important as well, because a lot of people who have these hypersensitivity disorders will be very sensitive to those chemicals that you find in cleaning products.
Fantastic. Well, look, Polly, thanks for coming on today to give us an update there on the smart eating and asthma area of things. And as you say, increase the vitamin C and get into those blueberries and start to, get a few things under control there, hey?
Absolutely, that's Ben.
Fantastic. Polly Ray there talking to us today about smart eating asthma. Of course, for more details, you can jump on to mindfood.com.
Mind Food Radio, smart thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Well, cold and flu season is around the corner and we love Dr. Jeanette Randell.
We sure do. Have you noticed I've started wearing woolens to the radio studio? Because it is getting colder and wetter.
You in wool just look so lovely, you know, that colour you're wearing today.
But I do not want to catch the flu this year. I am so adamant not to catch
it. But don't you get the flu injection?
No, I don't.
See, I do.
Is that? I tell you what, I'm not even asking you if that's a good idea.
Why?
Well, I'm going to ask Dr. Jeanette.
Well, yeah, Dr. Jeanette will probably say it's a good idea.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Jeanette.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, today we're talking about sort of, you know, as it's getting colder with winter coughs and colds and, you know, I guess the importance of antibiotics. But what do you think about a flu jab?
I have a flu jab every year. I jab my kids every year. I don't want to lose 2 weeks from the flu. So, yeah, I have one every year.
You know, it's funny, since I've been having the flu jab, I have not had a chest infection for 4 years.
Is there a big growth in that in terms of the winter jabs, you know, the flu jabs, Dr. Jeanette?
There's a government program that targets everyone over the age of 65, so that age group is very well covered by flu vaccination now. And in the last couple of years, since that really nasty flu epidemic a couple of years ago, we've also been able to give free flu shots to anyone with chronic illness. Mm. So we're certainly covering a lot more of the population. And I think because we're doing a lot more flu vaccinations now, we're just promoting it to all of our patients. Mm. And, you know, if you're working and you've got kids in school, you really don't want to be losing those 2 weeks.
Now, Ben, that won't cover your hypochondria, but...
That's another segment in itself. So what are we looking out for this year? What's on the radar?
We're not expecting it to be a bad flu season, but every year, of course, everybody gets the usual coughs and colds. Mm-hmm. You know, little kids with the ear infections and the sore throats and, you know, adults with the common cold. So I guess in general practice what we see is lots of people coming through the door with these respiratory illnesses, really looking for advice and help, and a lot of the time looking for antibiotic prescriptions.
But with the antibiotic prescriptions, you know, a lot of people don't finish them, do they? You know, as soon as the first signs of them getting well, they kind of stop. Now, how important is it to complete the entire course?
It's really important, yeah. And in fact, we're giving too many antibiotics out in Australia compared to a lot of the overseas countries. We're still prescribing too many antibiotics. So at NPS, we're very keen to encourage both doctors and patients, you know, not to reach for an antibiotic at the first sign of a cold. A lot of these illnesses are viral, probably 80 to 90% in fact are viral, and antibiotics are not going to make one scrap of difference.
You know,
every time we take an antibiotic, the bugs get a little bit smarter the next time round. So we're seeing this issue of antibiotic resistance in the community. We're using too many antibiotics means that when we really need them, they actually don't work.
Now, apart from a flu jab, you know, at the start of the season, what else can we be doing to kind of make sure we don't catch the colds and flus of winter?
Well, at an individual level, it's about staying healthy, obviously. So eating healthy food and getting enough fluids and, you know, not getting too run down or stressed, that's really important.
And back to exercise.
Yes, obviously exercising, but, you know, avoiding large groups of people. So in Brisbane, every year, the GPs, we dread exhibition time. It's in August, and we see a huge spike in numbers for the 2 weeks after the exhibition.
Is that right?
Wow.
Absolutely. We just dread it. And
that's the Easter show off my list.
Well, what happens if you're hopping on a plane?
Yes, planes, anywhere where you're in close confines with people.
Hey, listen, Dr. Jeanette, thank you very much. As always, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Lovely. Bye.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
Welcome back to Mind Food Radio. Well, I hope you're enjoying today's program. Catherine McClusker is a very interesting woman. She is an opera singer for a very long time, but founding director of KM Yoga in Sydney. She discovered yoga and meditation in Mexico in the year 2000 and has been teaching worldwide ever since. Some of the people she's taught with, after living for 15 years in London, she taught the likes of Bjork and Rachel McAdams, and she joins us on the line today. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I tell you what, you've got a very interesting life. How does an opera singer get into yoga?
Well, it's interesting.
interesting because I think a lot of creative people are into yoga and meditation, mm-hmm. and I was looking for something that was going to help with nerves, performance nerves, and I actually went to an acupuncturist who also happened to be a Kundalini yoga teacher trainer, and he was the one that encouraged me to try it. I just had an amazing connection to it, and I realized very quickly that it gave me a very deep inner peace that I'd been looking for. And so I found it in the form of Kundalini yoga, and I also really liked it compared to other styles of yoga that I'd tried because it was very creative.
How do you keep the discipline of doing something like this? Because obviously it's a life-giving thing for you. You really got touched by it, and it keeps giving you the energy that you need to get through life. So what advice do you have for people?
Well, I think once you recognize that something really works for you, that it does provide a great deep inner peace and balance, as well as a lot of creative energy, then why wouldn't you want to continue with it?
Mm. So your creative energy continues. You launched the new studio. I'm looking at a photo here on the internet. It's very, very nice.
Thank you.
What does that mean for you?
When I came back from London after living there for 11 years, I realised in Sydney there was no yoga studio that offered these three styles of yoga, Kundalini yoga, Nam, and Jivamukti. And whilst they're different, they all complement one another because they all use mantras as part of the yoga style.
When you look back at your early career in opera, what techniques did you learn about life that has helped you get to where you are today from that experience?
I think that without discipline and a passion and commitment to what you really enjoy and what fulfills you in life, without those things, then I don't think it's possible really to succeed very well in anything.
Mm. Yeah, now, you're launching a brand new book and CD. Tell us all about that.
Yeah, very exciting. I'd wanted to write a book about Kundalini because it is one of my passions, and I actually did a meditation about it for quite some time, and then a publisher in London approached me, emailed me out of the blue, and said, "I've heard you're a great Kundalini teacher, and we're looking for someone to write about Kundalini meditation. Would you be interested?"
How fantastic is that?
Shocked and thrilled at the same time.
So it's been a real transformation for you. I mean, just by listening to you, you do have that Zen sound to your voice. It's almost like you've reached a plateau in life where a lot of people want to get to, but aren't prepared sometimes to take that plunge or that risk.
I think once they do take that jump of faith, then I think that they soon realise that, okay, it might be challenging to start, but once they realise how it affects them and how that impacts on their daily life, then I feel a lot of people really enjoy it and don't find the commitment and the discipline such an arduous chore.
Fantastic. Well, Catherine, thank you very much for joining us on the line today. Very interesting story there, and it's Kundalini Mantra Meditations. Thanks again, Catherine.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Now, this is a very interesting topic, Michael. We're talking with Professor David Isaacs, Professor of Paediatric Infectious Diseases at the University of Sydney. He's called for an introduction of and compensation for those who suffer a serious adverse reaction to a vaccination.
Well, and of course, vaccinations, particularly once you've had kids, become such a hotbed, I guess, of discussion, you know, with friends and families in terms of medical profession, in terms of, you know, do you, don't you? Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks very much.
So this is a really big discussion point with us, and I know we've done lots of different stories on Mind Food with vaccination. You're obviously pro-vaccination.
Very strongly, like most doctors.
Yeah. And tell us, why should we be vaccinating our children?
Look, I mean, you're probably too young, guys. If I speak to older people, they'll tell you that almost every person in their class was affected by polio. Diphtheria used to kill many, many children through not being able to breathe properly. And when in the Russia, just 20 years ago, they stopped immunizing because things were so chaotic in the new Soviet Union, back came diphtheria again, hundreds of thousands of cases, 5,000 deaths. So we're talking about diseases that haven't totally gone away unless we keep immunizing.
And listen, tell us about, you know, your concept in terms of the introduction of compensation for those who suffer a serious adverse reaction to vaccination.
Okay. So look, I'll just give you an example.
Mm.
For measles, for example, before we were immunising properly, as I said, there were about 4 or 5 deaths a year of children, and there were quite a lot of children left brain damaged, perhaps 10, 15 children a year left brain damaged from an inflammation of the brain that we call encephalitis.
Mm.
And that hit 1 in every 1,000 children. Okay,
yeah.
And given that we've got 250,000 children being born a year,
mm.
you can see how many cases
yeah.
would be if you didn't immunise. It'd be 250-odd cases a year,
right.
children, with quite a proportion of them being left brain damaged. Now, immunisation can give you that same inflammation of the brain, but only 1 in a 1,000,000 doses of the immunisation. Okay?
Yep.
So we immunise all our children against measles, 250,000 children a year, so that's one case of this measles vaccine-induced brain damage every 4 years, or inflammation of the brain every 4 years. Incredibly rare. You'll be desperately unlucky to be the parent that's got that child. But if you are the parent that's got that child, it's not your fault. It's not the doctor's fault, because he gave it in good faith. It's not the vaccine company's fault. So these are known, incredibly rare adverse events
mm.
that no one at present gets compensation for. And the argument at the moment, I guess, would be, well, the healthcare services will look after that. Well, I'm a paediatrician, and I know when a child's severely handicapped, the healthcare services can do so much, but the family is desperately out of pocket.
Yeah.
They're forever fundraising for wheelchairs and this and that. And, you know, they get given them by the Lions Club or what have you. I mean, Rotary, great organisations. And, yes, we're a very giving, caring society. But this is something that if you ask anyone else, they'd say, well, society should pay for it. If people are getting these vaccines in good faith to protect their own child and to protect their other children around them, I mean,
yeah.
in the society, they're doing it for their own sake and for society's sake. But surely if something goes wrong, society should compensate them.
So what's the next steps?
The next step is putting political pressure on, really. We've just had a meeting about ethics in immunisation at the Sydney University on Monday. Very well attended. Over 100 experts from all around the country came, and from New Zealand as well. And we will now be putting the case to government.
Look, it's certainly one of those discussion points, and as I said early on, it particularly once you have babies and you know you're heading off to get them vaccinated, it does make you stop and think. So thanks very much for coming on the show today, Professor.
Lovely. Thanks very much for inviting me.
Thank you, Professor.
And for more details on vaccination, go to mindfood.com.
Mind Food Radio. Smart thinking. The perfect gift idea is a Mind Food magazine subscription. Visit mindfood.com today.
And welcome back to Mind Food Radio. Well, here's a guy who certainly gets around. This week he's been at Rookwood Cemetery doing some work. Angus Stewart, welcome to the show.
G'day there, Ben.
I tell you what, Rookwood Cemetery, you know, is a very interesting place, not only for, visiting, you know, loved ones, but it's also a microcosm for horticulture, isn't it?
It's an amazing place. It was established in 1867. Back in those days, they had very strong horticultural kind of links.
Yeah.
So, yes, the then director of the Botanic Gardens in Sydney spent a lot of time planting all sorts of amazing trees out there. So the backbone of the landscape is truly amazing with, you know, over 100-year-old bunya pines and hoop pines and all sorts of unusual trees.
Just fascinating. Well, now, going from that to this, we're moving into a different season of the garden, and we're looking at a little bit of composting, getting ready for those winter months. What should we be doing around the place in preparation for all this over the next few weeks?
Oh, look, autumn is a wonderful time to think about composting because if you've got deciduous trees, obviously there's a whole lot of leaves there that can be easily raked up. And
yep.
And it's also a great time just to do a bit of general light pruning to clean things up after that hectic sort of growth season of spring and summer. So there's just a wealth of material there to build a compost heap, and that can then set you up for you know, getting the soil ready for spring, especially in the vegetable garden.
Then what do I do with them once I've mulched them? What should I do? Should I have a compost bin and then put them into that, or what do I do?
Look, there's all sorts of ways you can go about it. I mean, you can just use them as a mulch where you just lay them out over the surface of the soil and they'll gradually break down and compost over, you know,
couple of months.
Yeah. But the other thing, if you want to speed the whole process up, that's where you can either use a compost bin. Councils have them readily available, a lot of councils.
Yep.
Or you can just construct your own. Basically, just a heap of organic materials on the ground will compost a lot quicker. I've got a bin that I built out of old fence palings.
Oh, okay.
And I've got a couple of trapdoors at the bottom. And what I do is I just keep adding stuff to the top.
Okay.
And the trick, though, is that when you're adding things like the dead leaves and so on, you actually need a source of nutrition for all the microbes that do the composting.
So what do you do there?
Either your kitchen scraps are a great way to do it, just burying those amongst all your dead leaves and prunings, or some manure is always good if you've got a chook yard, or you can get hold of stable manure. All those sorts of sources are a wonderful way to just speed up the composting process and add a bit of nutrition to your compost as well.
Yeah, a friend of mine had one in his backyard, the compost bin, and I tell you what, when you take the lid off it, it's sort of like, whew.
Well, what's happening is you've got not enough oxygen generally in the heap. It's too wet.
Okay, right.
And that favours a whole lot of microbes that can live without oxygen, and they're ones that tend to generate things like rotten egg gas and methane.
Okay.
Which are not what you want. So the trick is keeping the heap aerated, and that's where a mixture, if you're using too many wet kitchen scraps, that's when it tends to go wet and slimy and smelly.
Ugh.
So mixing it up with your dead leaves or shredded newspaper, that sort of thing.
Well, look, Angus, thanks. It was a nice segue, as we say in the commercial world, from Rookwood Cemetery to composting. But it was an interesting story, and it was done in the best of heart. And thanks for your time, and we'll catch up with you next time.
Cheers, Ben.
Mind Food Radio, Smart Thinking with Michael McHugh and Ben Starr.
Well, we're all guilty of this. Breakfast time, we get up, we rush out to work. Today I drove down to work and bought a coffee.
Yeah, well, that's not breakfast.
But I've started a new regime.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I have, I have my rolled oats every morning now.
Yes, that's good.
And I'm trying to for cholesterol because I found out my cholesterol is very high.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, of course, we've got that recipe too for Bircher. You see that Michelle talked about.
That's right.
You can make the night before, put in your fridge, and then have the next day.
Fantastic.
But on today's show, we've got Cherry Dowling, who's the Nutrition Services Manager for Sanitarium. Hi, Cherry.
Hi there.
How do we get a body like Ian Thorpe?
We all want one of those.
Yes, but you're going to be helping us, I guess, and sharing with us some tips and ideas for breakfast over winter, as, you know, we struggle to get out of bed on time and race out to work. So what are some good ideas?
Well, I mean, you raised a good point earlier. I mean, oats, actually, is a great way of actually reducing your cholesterol levels. We know that breakfast eaters as a whole actually have lower cholesterol levels than non-breakfast eaters. So that's a really interesting point to note. So obviously a big advocate of breakfast.
Did you know that, Ben?
I didn't know that. For someone who has hypochondria, I'm writing it down. Yes.
Excellent. I mean, you know, on those mornings when it is cold, it is nice to have something hot to come out of the bed from. And, you know, hot oats, it's pretty much gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really get much better than hot oats. But there are a couple of other ideas. You know, if you are on the run, you have to be mega organized for this, but, you know, maybe if you are a bit of a baker, maybe bake up a batch of muffins, healthy muffins, and have those ready on call for you running out the door with your cup of coffee.
Yeah. It's interesting when you look at cereals and things, though. I mean, you know, the prepackaged stuff. I mean, is it good for you?
There are a number of cereals that, you know, are good for you. Obviously, like I said, oats is the best.
Yeah.
Weet-Bix is really low in fat and sugar.
Mm-hmm.
You do have to look at the packet, though, because some of those things that we would assume would be healthy, you know, some of those toasted mueslis can be up there in the fat and the sugar.
Yeah.
So it is important to look at the label and be aware of what you're consuming.
Mm.
And also, one of the things that, you know, you can remember is if you are sensitive to oats, you know, people who have gluten sensitivities often avoid oats, but you can actually swap those oats out for any other grain. So,
yeah,
you know, you can use... You could actually use rice. I've got people that I recommend having, you know, sort of, it's almost like a rice pudding that they have in the morning, or
right,
quinoa or millet, you know. There's,
yeah,
all those other grains that you can use.
Hey, listen, thanks, Sherry. That's interesting. And I know, you know, our listeners will be struggling to get out of bed over winter, and it's always good just to get a few tips and ideas. So thanks a lot.
No problem.
Thank you very much for joining us. And, of course, for more details, you can go to mindfood.com, where all that information is sitting.
That's right, and lots more recipes for breakfast and winter.
And welcome back to Mind Food Radio. Smart Thinking, Ben Starr with you today. Well, Shannon McNeil has an interesting job. She's looking at the change of seasons, and she works at the Wellness Supervisor and Senior Naturopath at Gwingana. How are you?
Good, thank you.
So when we were looking at the seasons, like, I'll give you an example. Yesterday I was coming home from work, and all of a sudden I looked up and I thought, oh, the sun's changing. Winter's on its way. I can't stand winter. And all of a sudden you start to feel quite weird. Is that part of the change of the season?
It might be a drop in your serotonin, but as we move into winter, we've actually got to consider that we will start eating heavier foods.
Yeah.
And we do need to maintain through winter warmer foods. It's actually more important to keep supporting your digestion.
Yep.
One hot tip that I often use with clients at the retreat is getting them to have a squeeze of lemon,
mm-hmm,
every morning in some warm water, and that can actually stimulate digestion as we move through the winter months when we do start to feel a little bit more sluggish.
Now, what about the psychology, though, of the seasons? That must affect a lot of people. Do you see spikes in depression around winter, or is it pretty much the same all year round?
Yeah, spikes in depression do happen in winter, and that's because we reduce our serotonin levels,
uh-huh,
which we actually stimulate from being out in the sunshine, particularly,
mm-hmm,
first thing in the morning. That sends a message to our brain to make serotonin, our happy hormone.
Yep.
So we know through winter that does decline, and it is strongly related to the Northern Hemisphere with people experiencing seasonal affective disorder, which is simply a deficiency in serotonin.
Mm.
So we can boost serotonin quite easily by making sure we eat our protein foods.
Okay.
Particularly chicken, particularly turkey.
Yep.
Particularly nuts and seeds, anything with what we call amino acids or proteins. So that will maintain your serotonin, and we will still get a little bit of stimulation if we get out and exercise in the morning with some sunshine.
Now, what about people that have all the allergy problems? I mean, I never got allergies until I got into my late 30s, and then all of a sudden, I'm like the allergy king. How would,
yeah,
that happen?
Allergies are very common with a transition in season, different pollens. We do know there's a genetic component to allergies, but there's definitely an environmental,
mm-hmm,
component. So my hot tips are to keep up your turmeric levels. So turmeric is a lovely little herb or spice, essentially, that you can access as a powder or as a root or,
yeah,
rhizome. It's a little bit similar to ginger.
Yeah, turmeric, yeah.
I suggest to take turmeric every day.
What, just with your food?
With food,
yep.
Yep, you can make it also as a tea, so you just can chop it up like you would with ginger,
yep,
scoop it in some hot water and drink it as a tea.
Mm-hmm.
That turmeric is fantastic. Lots of human trials now proving its worth as an antioxidant,
mm,
also as an anti-cancer component,
mm,
but because of its, it will reduce your histamine levels. And so does topping up your vitamin C levels. Vitamin C naturally helps you to detox histamine out of your body. It's histamine that causes the allergy response.
Oh, okay. Now, when we're looking at your job and what you do there at the Gwingana retreat place, what are the,
yep,
major things that come through the door around this time of the year as we start to head into winter, like with your clients?
With clients, we always see a lot of fatigue. People,
yep,
are quite stressed these days.
Mm-hmm.
We do see people with, I guess, allergy problems. We do see people with weight issues.
Mm.
We see people that are wanting support with fertility. And just general well-being. Just general well-being, wanting to feel better.
So that was Shannon McNeil from the Wellness Supervisor, and of course she's the Senior Naturopath at Gwingana Retreat, the health retreat there. For more details, jump onto mindfood.com.
This is Mind Food Radio, smart thinking.
Jacqueline Hellyer joining us here on the radio show. We were talking about some therapy issues, and today we're talking about breaking up.
I know. Can you imagine?
Have you ever broken up with anyone?
Yes. When I was much younger, of course.
Oh, really?
But, you know, they
How did you do it, Michael?
Harrowing, badly, of course.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
What about these people that text people now?
Oh, that's appalling.
Or it's Facebook
like,
it.
It's like an hour-day faxing someone.
It cost too much money to fax back then.
But look, I'd like to welcome back our sex therapist, Jacqueline, back on the show.
Yeah, hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
So we're breaking up. What's the etiquette with that?
Yeah, how do you break up? Properly?
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
How do you get out of a relationship but still, I guess maintain a dignity about it all?
Well, the key thing is to realise that relationships can have use by dates. Right?
Yep.
So the problem is that when a relationship ends, we generally think of it as being a failure, right?
Mm.
Because we've bought into this story tale, fairy tale myth that, you know, you get together and then you live happily ever after.
Yeah.
And if it's not ever after, then there must have been something terrible, it's a failure. And normally we then need to blame someone for that failure.
Yeah.
It couldn't possibly be us.
No, that's not human nature.
So, and then that leads to, bitterness and recrimination and all that sort of thing.
Mm.
So if you can look at it as, look, we've had a good time, we came together for the best reasons, we were in it for the good reasons, but it's really done its course.
Yeah.
Then you can exit quite maturely and respectfully.
But does that come with age, Jacqueline? For young people, I guess, that have developed an intimacy and a relationship quite young, say in your late teens or 20s, and then, that became their partner for many, many, many years. You are a very different person as you go through your 30s, 40s, 50s.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Breaking up, with those long-term relationships would be very hard, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's never easy. And, often with breakups, one person wants to break up and the other one doesn't necessarily, But, if both people can come to an acceptance that really it can't continue, that they've both done their best, and that they've talked it through and come to the realisation, and then they can actually support each other in moving on.
So it's fear that you're out on your own again and you've got to start all over again by yourself. I think for some people that'd be terrifying.
What if you're bald and middle-aged and overweight?
Well, it is terrifying. And, I work a lot with people who've, separated in middle age or even later, and they're kind of like, oh, my God, what do I do now? I don't even know how to date people.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
One of my clients referred to herself as a very experienced virgin. She had sex for 20 years, but she felt like brand new,
Oh, my goodness.
And I think, that's kind of quite true. And that whole thing about, dating again and then, oh, my God, having sex with someone after the first time in decades,
So tell me, what do you suggest that they do? Do they have a conversation with their partner and say, hey, are you happy in this relationship still? Or because, you can't say it's over. There may be a few tweaks that can be made that can fix it.
Oh, absolutely. And the trouble is people generally don't have that conversation early enough.
So, they have an affair and that's sort of an
exit? Something disastrous happens.
Yeah.
One of them or both of them get so miserable that they act out in some way. Yeah, they have an affair or they do something crazy or...
Sure.
Or they just get really narky towards the other one.
So taking it from today and just listening to you, Jacqueline, the key thing, though, is communication, isn't it?
The key thing is communication and to really sort of tap into early on, and to keep the communication going.
Yeah.
It's okay to not be feeling crash hot in the relationship and to share that with your partner. That's how your relationship actually grows, when you can be honest and open with each other and be able to hear that and work with it.
Yeah. Well, we've been chatting sex therapy, little tips on breaking up and not to break up. It's all about open communication. Jacqueline Hellyer, thank you very much for joining us on the show today.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us today. Now, of course, if you missed anything on today's program, jump onto mindfood.com, follow the links on the radio tab, and you'll be getting the little bits of information that you missed out of today's program right before your very eyes using the power of a keyboard. Coming up next week on the radio show that everybody loves to talk about, we're going to be chatting with Carolyn Etting, our fashion editor. She'll be updating us on ID Fashion Week. We're heading back to the garden again with our great friend Angus Stewart. And Therese Mudgeway, our kinesiologist, has an interesting proposition to pose to you next week. It's called the triangle. Until then, take care. Have a safe week, won't you?
Mind Food Radio Smart Thinking was produced in the studio of Radio Australasia. Produced by Ben Starr and Brian Newington and Patrick Kayrouse. Bogart Torelli speaking.